from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. We can be found on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya, or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. When you're driving to work, from work, or around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball, and we'll be there with you for the drive. For the latest takes on NBA free agency, follow all of the Locked On Podcast Network hosts on one Twitter feed at LockedOnNBAnet. It's an awesome way to get all of the latest opinions from the local experts during NBA free agency on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk about the Giants' 6-3 loss to the Rockies. Sure enough, Jeff Samardzija's ERA still moving upwards to where those peripherals were, as we predicted would happen. Gave up a grand slam, and that was pretty much enough to bury the Giants. We'll talk about Mark Melancon and a very troubling number for him ever since he joined the Giants. And we're going to talk about Pablo Sandoval, who had another big game batting left-handed. Steven Vogt, a little bit about Buster Posey as well, and how Vogt kind of plays into Posey's potential playing time situation. But first, their record. With the loss, the Giants fell to 34-45. Losing by 3, their run differential fell to minus 93, which has an expected win-loss record of 30-49. The Giants are only 7.5 games out of a wild card spot, but again, there are 13 teams ahead of them. So in the first inning, Pablo Sandoval hit an absolute rocket into right center field that scored Mike Yastrzemski, who had reached on an error. So I think that ball was hit 115 miles an hour by Sandoval, and he wasn't done yet in this game. Later in the game, he hit a missile home run to center field. It had a little bit of draw to it. It kind of hooked to the left, total rocket home run that brought the Giants closer. By that point, they were losing in the game. But talking about Sandoval a little bit, I mean, we haven't talked about him much on the show because he's probably not going to be part of the long term here. This is the last year of his contract that he signed with the Red Sox, so the Giants are paying him the league minimum. The Red Sox are paying his full salary. But the fact is, he's been tremendous. All told, he's hitting .288, .326 on base, and a .575 slugging. So that among the three is the number that stands out the most. So the difference between the average and the slugging there is .288, and that's the isolated power, or ISO, and that's very high. So all told, that line is 30% above average, approximately. He is homering on 27% of his fly balls, which is a rate we would not expect to continue. So when that stops happening, then everything's going to get pulled down. But still, tremendously valuable offensively against right-handed pitching so far this season. And the fact that he's making the league minimum and doing this, he's going to have value to some kind of a contender who would like to use him, whether they need somebody to start, which I wouldn't advise would be a great idea with Sandoval, especially because he still struggles against lefties, but to use him like the Giants use him, spot starts and pinch hitting against righties, he would be of real interest and value to some other team, most likely. So there continues to be this myth that he's not bad against left-handed pitching, but, you know, and a lot of that had to do with his spring training performance. And you know how I feel about spring training performances. We talked about that yesterday or the day before. So even this year, when he's been 30% above average, he's actually been 30% below average against lefties, hitting .233, .281 on base, .367 slugging. In his career against lefties, we're talking over 1,000 plate appearances, he's been about 25% below average. But against righties in his career this year, in the last 3 years, however you want to look at it, he has been good. This year, 43% above average, hitting .300, .336 on base, .623 slugging percentage. Those are just ridiculous numbers. So I would make the case he should be starting against right-handed pitchers right now. And I'm not afraid to eat my words. I was thinking that he looked to be in decline even against right-handed pitchers, and that he wasn't providing enough defensive or base running value to be that valuable even if he was hitting slightly above average against righties. But honestly, he's been one of the few guys hitting in the lineup, so I would be a fan of seeing him play more often against right-handed pitching. Later in the first inning, Sandoval advanced to third on a wild pitch, so Dickerson was up there, hitting fourth. Sandoval on third base, one out, a chance to drive him in without even getting a hit. You know, those situations that people love to talk about and focus on. And in a two-strike count, Dickerson goes down the left field line, the opposite field line, and hits a double that just tucks inside the line near the wall. So he had another good game. He also drew a walk in this game. So he's been a total revelation. I know it's only been like five games, but again, his career numbers against right-handed pitching are very good. And we're just seeing him continue to do well against righties here with the Giants. So I really am a fan of that pickup and looking forward to his at-bats every single time he comes up there. Later in the game with the Giants down 5-3 and Mike Yastrzemski on second base, he had hit a double. He was there with no outs and then Sandoval couldn't advance him to third. Not that that should be his only goal. But then Yastrzemski clearly wanted to force the issue and he tried to steal third base with Dickerson at the plate and one out. And he was thrown out by a mile. So it's kind of just a rookie mistake. There's no reason to get thrown out down by two runs there. That, to me, is the type of aggressive base running that we don't need to see. Because of how good Dickerson has been, just a single, and you're going to score relatively easily, most likely. And you're down by two, so your run, you know, it matters. But at the same time, you cannot afford to get thrown out in that situation. And he did, but, you know, you don't really fault him too much. It's a learning opportunity, and hopefully he doesn't do the same thing again. So in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the pitching. We'll talk all about Jeff Samardzija and the struggles he had. We're going to talk about Mark Melancon, a really interesting tidbit about him. And then we're going to talk about Stephen Vogt and Buster Posey. So that's all coming up next, but first... Okay, so as promised, we're going to talk about the pitching in this game, Jeff Samardzija, Mark Melancon, and we'll also talk about Vogt and Posey. So Jeff Samardzija did not have a great outing. He looked strong to start the game. But all told, he allowed a grand slam. He only allowed three hits in the game, but five earned runs. It's hard to do that, really. Two walks, six strikeouts in five innings. But the thing to note, and I know I'm like gloating a little bit about this, but there was plenty written about how Jeff Samardzija was having a good year and how he was primed for a rebound. And it was nice to see that he was having a nice rebound season when he had this good ERA. But if you listen to the show, we've been saying all season long that doom and gloom is coming for Jeff Samardzija based on the peripherals. It's really not that complicated. But what it does is it really points to how important it is to understand these metrics and to use them in modern analysis. And if you refuse to use them, if you want to pretend they don't exist, if you want to make fun of people who do use them because you don't understand what they are and they have funny names, then you're falling behind as a baseball analyst. And you're going to be in the dark as a fan. So Jeff Samardzija pretty much all year has had peripherals up around 5, meaning his strikeout rate, walk rate, home run rate kind of suggests that his earned run average should be around 5. And that generally is more predictive of predicting his future ERA than his current ERA in a small sample. So he had this like 3.27 ERA just a month ago. But peripherals up around 5, and what have we seen since then? The ERA has jumped well over a run in that time. It's not done yet. He still has higher to go, but it's now at a 4.52 ERA with a 4.71 fielding independent pitching and a 5.08 expected fielding independent pitching. So he's almost made it all the way up to those peripherals. It just continues to climb every time he goes out there. And there are legitimately, you know, people who write for newspapers who make fun of these stats and say that they're worthless. But at the same time, this is tangible evidence here. So, you know, ignore it at your own peril as a baseball analyst. So Samardzija, of course, 34 years old, under team control for one more season at $18 million. So that contract very much underwater at this point. Hard to see him ever regaining value and being a trade piece that other teams would want. But, you know, the velocity is down. Everything is just trending in the wrong direction for him right now, and it's just continued yesterday. Moving on to Mark Melancon, who appeared in yesterday's game, gave up another run. Two hits, one run, three strikeouts. Good to see the strikeouts. But he just continues to have these ridiculously high batting averages on balls in play against him. So a ball in play is anything but a home run that's put into the field of play. So the weird thing about Mark Melancon is that this was his total calling card before he came to the Giants. He was able to suppress batting averages on balls in play. So when they made contact and it wasn't a home run, which he also was good at preventing home runs and still is, it was so often weakly hit that he was able to keep this number down. But since he put on a Giants uniform, nobody in baseball has a higher batting average on balls in play against them. So among relievers since 2017, when Melanson joined the Giants, teams have a 371 batting average on balls in play against him. That is by far the highest in MLB. The next closest is 353, so a 20-point difference. So this is a metric that we do look at sometimes for luck, but also if you're just not very good, it's also going to be bad. So it's not always luck. I think that's a common misperception that batting average on balls in play is always luck related. The point is, he is no longer what he used to be. This was the one main skill that he brought to the table, and now he's like the absolute worst in baseball at it. So he still somehow manages to have respectable numbers, 3.72 ERA, 3.37 fielding independent pitching, 3.70 expected fielding independent pitching. But at the same time, if he goes out there, you know you're going to get a lot of hits. That's basically what this translates to, is hits. He doesn't strike a lot of people out, so you're relying on contact, and then nobody has a higher percentage of hits when they put the ball in play than Mark Melanson. So this is going to show up in the slash line against him. We'll just take a look at that now. Yeah, so teams against Mark Melanson since he put on a Giants uniform have a 299 batting average and a 358 on base percentage, a 419 slugging. That's roughly league average. But yeah, I think a lot of fan, even the casual fan and the fan who still relies solely on batting average to evaluate hitters, will appreciate the fact that Melanson allows hitters to become 300 hitters against him. The real issue is that 358 on base percentage against him. That is way too high for a guy who's seeing relatively high leverage innings, and it always seems year after year that Bochy really wants to put him into more significant innings, but year after year, Melanson is proving that he's just not the same guy he used to be. So I keep saying this, but Dyson and Maranta to me have to be way higher on the depth chart than Melanson. So lastly, I want to talk a little bit about Stephen Vogt and Buster Posey. And the reason is Stephen Vogt has continued to be a very nice weapon for the Giants. He's been a good hitter and he's a good defensive catcher as well. All told on the season, he's hitting 256, 327 on base, 444 slugging. Roughly league average offensively, and league average is better than average for a catcher. Against right-handed pitching specifically, he's hitting 264, 349 on base, 472 slugging. So these are just nice numbers. In his career against righties, he's been significantly above average, but below average against left-handed pitching. So he's a very nice person to have come off the bench and be a threat. It's not often you get a good hitting catcher, but that's what he is against righties. But then Buster Posey has just been a colossal disappointment with the bat, and he really has been hurting them offensively. Definitely still brings a lot defensively, but I just think it would be a good idea to see more of Stephen Vogt and maybe Buster Posey in a platoon. Posey has been dreadful against left-handed pitching this year, but that's like the only time in his entire career. It's been his way stronger side. Not that he is someone who should have been platooned earlier in his career, but even in 2017, he was 60% above average against lefties. Last year, 30% above average. So these were like down offensive years for him, but he was still really good against left-handed pitching. So I just think there's a case to be made that Sandoval should be in there against righties. Vogt should be in there against righties. I think the lineup is more threatening when those two are in there against righties as opposed to Longoria and Posey. And you really don't have anything to lose. It's not like Posey and Longoria represent long-term future value at this point. I mean, Posey perhaps, if he can rebound somehow, but he really is looking lost at the plate. He ended the game yesterday, by grounding into a weak double play. Anyway, coming up tonight, the Giants will take on the Diamondbacks in game one of a four-game series. Tyler Beede will be on the mound, taking on Alex Young, making his major league debut for the Diamondbacks. Alex Young is a left-handed pitcher, so we'll probably see Tyler Austin in there, probably see Buster Posey in there, Longoria. It'll be interesting to see if we see both Dickerson and Yastrzemski, or if they'll go with putting Brandon Belt in there and having Austin in left, or if Austin would play first and then we would see Dickerson and Yastrzemski. I'm not exactly sure how they'll do it. My guess would be Belt at first, Austin in left, and Dickerson in right. That'll be the guess for me, with Pilar in center. Also, will be interesting to see if Donovan Solano starts over Joe Panik or Brandon Crawford. I think he should, and I do think he will. for one of them. Anyway, to get this show every single day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. This is a daily show with new episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. Please consider leaving us a review, rating the show, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.